You know, we always say that discipline and structure give you freedom, right? You know, another kind of term we use is, you know, we'll teach you the black and white, but you play in the gray. You know, all those spontaneous decisions that you make, and that's the fun of the game. You know, it's a player's game still. You know, it's not a coach's game. This is not football where, you know, we're going to have a lot of say come game day.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my Hopkins homie, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Conference play is in mid-stride. There are three games where top 10 teams square off this weekend, including a real number one versus number two showdown that we've been waiting for all year. And as you heard, we'll hear from Duke head coach John Donowski in an interesting conversation with an interesting man. Lots to get to in this week's show. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, what's going on, my man? Busy week for us.
Real, real busy week. Just a lot happening. I've been on the women's side the last couple games for me. I've seen Maryland three times in a week, the Maryland women. I called their wins over Princeton, Michigan, and Johns Hopkins on Wednesday. But now I get back in the saddle. Double dip for me this weekend, Friday night, Maryland at Ohio State, Saturday night, Hopkins at Penn State. It's here, baby. April is always a blur in the Dixon household. Loyola, big game this weekend against Navy at home Friday night. Loyola Dons, big win this week, knocked off the powerful St. Mary's Saints. So a huge win for Loyola. So everything's clicking.
Hey, I got a question for you. Last night or Wednesday night, when you did the Maryland Hopkins women's game, what was the crowd like? Weather was great and schools are on spring break. I had a friend tell me her daughter is like a middle school lax player and she was contemplating whether she should go. It's like a team thing. They were all going to go.
There were a lot of young ladies there, which was cool. Can't see the crowd. I saw it, you know, in crowd shots, but they're not super wide. We're in the Tizer Tower this year, calling the game from basically the vantage point of like the Hubble telescope, because our vantage point that we used to take, which is that middle concourse opposite bench side, opposite tower side, Maryland does not want their logo, the M, upside down on television. So we can't shoot from that low angle. So I wasn't really able to see the crowd in full. I can tell you it was loud, especially late when the game got really tight and you could hear the girls. Most of the girls that were in attendance were cheering for Maryland, doing the TERPS chant. So it looked like a healthy crowd, but I couldn't give you a solid gauge. But I will say the crowds are back, baby. I mean, the crowds, a lot of these games, very well attended. Did the Ohio State game a couple weeks ago. Standing room only this past weekend. I know there was a great crowd for the Michigan game, Maryland, healthy crowd at Loyola Holy Cross, really good crowd, Hopkins, Rutgers. And those are just the local ones that, you know, and some that I was able to watch on television. But we've seen great crowds at Klockner this year, at Arlotta for the Virginia Notre Dame game. So, and I'm sure this weekend will be no exception. It's a fun time of year.
Yeah, for sure. And there's some great games this weekend. Before we get to that, let's look back on last week. Michigan had a huge win over Maryland. Duke beat Virginia to kick off the weekend. And then there were a couple of other upsets where, you know, Jacksonville lost in Utah and Navy beat BU. That was a bit of a surprise in the Patriot League. But give me your overall sense on what took place last weekend and how it fits into the script writers of the college lacrosse season.
No, I mean, look, Michigan springing the upset, first ever program win over Maryland. So Kevin Connery, former defensive coordinator for John Tillman, was on his staff the 2017 national championship. Michigan, monumental win for the Wolverines. You mentioned Navy beating BU. That's a huge win for a team that was on, what, a 6-7 game losing streak. Now they get some momentum back and make the Patriot League more interesting. Duke beating Virginia. I think many people scoffed when I publicly admitted this time last week that I had Duke as my number one, but the Blue Devils came out and took care of business against a very good Virginia team. So, wow. I mean, conference races heating up. The individual games are terrific. The weather's getting better. And you got to look at the Ivy League, Penn being able to come back and beat Yale. Yale just giving up bushels and bushels of goals, but the Bulldogs were able to turn things around earlier this week. They went on the road. I'm sorry, they had a home game. It was at home in Reese and beat BU, handing the Terriers their second consecutive loss. So the Ivy League continues to be interesting. Just a lot going on. I feel like this is the time of year where my head is spinning. It really is. And you just have to try to keep composed, keep calm, focus, eyes on the prize, you know, family and lacrosse and all those kinds of things. You try to work, you know, you try to compartmentalize them. And, you know, looking back on last week, there was a lot of hubbub around our first ever sponsor. And, you know, George, it was a lot of talk, a lot of positive talk. And people were chiming in with the type of lax parents that we missed out on. We didn't cover in our commentary.
Yeah, I got a lot of feedback as well. And if you are interested in sponsoring an episode of this show, reach out to me. My email address is dbflynn@gmail.com, dbflynn@gmail.com. And maybe we could get you on a future episode. You can pick the give and go topic like George did. And he hit a home run on that. They've got a lot of feedback. So what were some of the comments people were saying that we missed? Who do we miss?
We missed parents that go on message boards and forums and post anonymously about Ooh. Kids.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. And I've experienced that. I have. I had to go after, I don't know who the person is, but I had to go after someone who was posting on a forum anonymously naming kids. And I just sent, you know, I was like, listen, you know, it was a group email. And I just said, if you want to do this, identify yourself. Just put your name on it. You know, otherwise, stop being a coward and knock it off. And a funny thing is, I think this same person has just got done with that handle and then just registered under a different one now and is still posting like the same garbage, you know. So it's, you know, but yeah, I've some of that stuff is just, it's absolutely toxic. So we did miss that one. That was one that several people commented on.
Yeah. Was there anything else?
That was the biggie. The moms that yell, "We love to watch you play," was something we didn't discuss after they're like, you know, screaming their heads off at the refs, getting into it with other parents. A lot of moms can be really kind of tough on their kids, whether it's boys or girls, but yet they'll always take the time to say, "We love to watch you play." Little contradictory there. Those were the two that kind of bubbled up. How about you? Did you get any?
I did. But most people just were like, "Hey, that guy George was pretty good on the show," yeah. Which I don't want him to hear that because he'll want to become a regular guest.
Yeah, right.
Love you, George. And thank you, Indutex USA, for your sponsoring last week's episode. But Dix, it's time to move forward. We have an incredible slate of games this week. As I mentioned, there are a lot of top 20 matchups, including three top 10 matchups, which is unusual at this point in the season. But that's where we are. There are three on Friday and three on Saturday because it's a holiday weekend. I think some people are trying to avoid it. There's no Sunday games. Let's put it that way. So people are playing on Friday. So let's start with Friday's matchups. Number 16, Michigan, back in the top 20 solidly after a win over Maryland. They're 5-4 overall, 1-1 in the Big Ten. They'll travel to Rutgers to face the number 12 Scarlet Knights, who are 7-3, but 0-2. In the Big Ten. That game's at 6 o'clock and it's on ESPNU.
Yeah, danger zone time for the Scarlet Knights. And this is an opportunity to score a win. They'll be at home, which they love. They were on the road for their first two Big Ten games. Will Brian Cameron play? Such a big piece of their offense. He's been missing the last couple weeks. And then all of a sudden, Kyle Mullen his goaltending isn't where it was through the first majority of the season. So can he get that back is a big question. So those are two things that I'm looking for. And then DeGenio went out against Hopkins. Is he back healthy? Because they're much different facing off with him in the lineup. I do have to give a shout out to their SID, Jordan Ozer. Jordan's a great guy. I know you know Jordan. When he was in town last weekend for the Rutgers-Hopkins game, he gave us a food recommendation. It's a brewery called, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Nepenthe, Nepenthe, in Hamden. He had a Korean cheesesteak and fries with Old Bay aioli.
Ooh.
So not only did he give us the location and the name of the restaurant, but what he ate. So thank you, Jordan. You know we love food on this podcast. Shout out.
That's a quality recommendation too. You know,
big
you,
time.
You can just say, oh, I like this place. Going to the distinct menu items, quality. That guy knows what he's talking about.
Jordan's a Jersey boy. He knows what he's talking about. Now you talk about Michigan. How about the Wolverines? 6-2, they win the first quarter. And then, you know, of course, you're kind of thinking, all right, Maryland's going to come back. Maryland's going to turn this around. And Michigan, you know, the Terps close the gap a little bit. But Michigan, and then, you know, fourth quarter comes around. You're kind of like, all right, is Kevin Connery going to be able to get his guys to close this out? Or is John Tillman going to, you know, work his magic and have another heartbreak for the Wolverines? And credit Michigan. They kept the foot on the gas. They kept scoring goals, and they played great. Quietly, Michigan has faced off very, very well this year. Wheatfelt was the Big Ten Specialist of the Week. You know, Josh Shawada, he's the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week. You got Ryan Cohen still doing great things. So this is a Michigan team that you have to now ask, can they handle the success? How do they go from that high, beating Maryland on the road? Now you got to go into Piscataway and do the same against Rutgers.
A top 10 matchup in Chapel Hill at 6 o'clock on Friday night when number 3 Virginia takes on number 9 North Carolina.
And Carolina, a team that is just quietly, you know, we've been talking about the ACC, and really it's Virginia, Duke, Notre Dame that everybody's been talking about. Carolina has been quietly winning ball games, quietly getting better each and every week. Obviously, they'll have their hands full with the Virginia Cavaliers, Virginia coming off of that loss to Duke last weekend. But when you look at this North Carolina team, Logan McGovern, the transfer from Bryant, sensational year, 47 points. Then you've got balance, you know, Goldsmith, Tillman, Matten, all with over 20 points. Welford, Andrew Tyre, you know, just making plays. And how about Andrew Tyre, the faceoff man? He's got 11 goals on the season. That's pretty darn good when you can win the draw and then go down and make something happen. But talk about balance, because last year this was a really unbalanced offensive team with Chris Gray. They still have one of the better goaltenders in the country in Colin Krieg. And then Connor Marr, one of the best short sticks in the country, voted, I believe, a first-team midseason All-American by Inside Lacrosse. They're going to have to show up. This is a Virginia team, very, very talented. A lot of people – I had a conversation with someone last week, and they were like, oh, Connor Schellenberger, Tuareton winner, hands down, no question. This is before the game against Duke. I was like, how can you say that? I'm not saying it's not going to happen, and I think certainly Schellenberger will be a finalist, invited to D.C., but there's no way you can say at this point in the season that Connor Schellenberger is the far and away Tuareton winner. And a lot of people feel like Connor Schellenberger, as good as he's been, still hasn't been Connor Schellenberger, taking a game over, putting Virginia on his back. Does that happen this weekend if needed? We'll see. Terrific game on tap.
In the Big Ten on Friday night, number 5 Maryland traveled to Columbus, Ohio to take on the Buckeyes, who are ranked number 17. That game's at 8 o'clock on Big Ten Network.
Yeah, I'll have that game with Joe Beninati. This game was slated to be on Easter Sunday, and I think both coaches were like, hey, come on. No. So it got moved to Friday. Short week for Ohio State. They played Penn State on Sunday on the road. Now they have an even shorter week going Sunday to Friday. And this is an Ohio State team that's been a little banged up this season. Handled at Penn State. A lot of fouls from Ohio State. Talking with Nick Myers this week, he reminded us that Ohio State is the most penalized team in the Big Ten. He's like, that's very uncharacteristic of Buckeye lacrosse. They got to become a little bit more disciplined. They welcome in a Maryland team smarting from that loss to Michigan a week ago. And offensively, I think Maryland's still trying to find that identity, still trying to, you know, against Penn State. You know, I think I talked about it last week when you talk about what people are now characterizing as sort of the big five: Notre Dame, Virginia, Duke, Cornell, and Maryland. And I said, out of that five, I think Maryland's on the shakiest ground. And that's based on the fact that when they beat Penn State, I thought they should have lost that game. You know, they got four goals from their short stick D middies, two from Kohler and two from Trader. They didn't get that last weekend. They didn't get those transition opportunities. You know, Jack Corse also stepped up big against Penn State. He was held in check last week against Michigan. I still think Maryland's still trying to figure things out on the offensive end. And when have you seen Luke Wehrman have the week that he had last week against Michigan, where he was, you know, beaten for the most part? You know, Michigan very quick off the whistle, making plays. So, but I think Wehrman is an X factor for Maryland, and this will be a great game. Prime time, Friday night on Big Ten Network.
Moving on to Saturday's games in the Big East, the top 20 matchup, number 11, Villanova, 8-2 on the season, 1-0 in the Big East, goes to Denver to take on the number 19 Pioneers, who need this win. This game's at 2 o'clock.
So this is a Villanova team that was humming with a six-game win streak, and then they were upended by Brown on a Monday matinee in Villanova, but then they rebounded with a nice win against St. John's. This is going to be a tough environment for the Wildcats. Bill Tierney being honored at Denver. So it is Bill Tierney Day. And if anyone can take that mental edge and perpetuate it even further, it's Bill Tierney. And he's going to have his guys ready to play. You mentioned this is must-win situation for the Pioneers after losing in D.C. last weekend to Georgetown, who, by the way, has now won five in a row. So this is, you know, I think the storyline here, obviously, is the Bill Tierney being honored. But how does Villanova handle that atmosphere? Barton Stadium is going to be rocking. Great venue for college lacrosse, one of the most underrated in the country. Tough task for Villanova.
And the number one versus number two matchup we've all been waiting for is taking place when Duke plays Notre Dame. Before we get to that, let's bring in our guest this week, Duke head coach John Donowski. Please welcome into the show the head coach of the top-ranked Duke Blue Devils, John Donowski. Coach, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
We're doing great, Coach. I don't know what the weather is like down in Durham, North Carolina, but here in the Baltimore area, it's gone from the Ides of March to the sweltering heat of July lacrosse tournament with heat and humidity. So it's been interesting watching teams adjust both on the high school level and the college level. But it's really great to have you with us. We always look back before we look into the present and then a little bit into the future with our guests. And with Duke, you know, in the media the last couple of years, words like disappointing, falling short have been kind of the narrative. And last year, the Blue Devils miss the NCAA tournament. A couple of years ago, the narrative was maybe best team ever on paper, that kind of thing. And I love your laugh, you know, whenever you look back on that, if you spend any time looking back on that, or maybe take us back a year ago when you didn't make the NCAA tournament, what runs through your mind and what runs through your players' minds?
Oh, I can't speak for the players, you know. A lot of them are gone. A lot of them are not here. But every team, you know, every team is different, and every team has their own journey. You know, some journeys are, you know, every journey is so always filled with ups and downs and heartaches and smiling. And you know, that's part of the fun of every season. I try not to give it too much. You know, you get too caught up. Sometimes when you win, you know, maybe other teams aren't that good that year, or you got a good draw, or you caught a team on a date where they were had some injuries, or you know, back to back tough games. You know, there's always you can always overanalyze everything, but at the end of the day, you know, last year's journey was disappointing. I didn't believe that we deserved to get in, you know, losing the last game. But as it turned out, if we had won the last game, we weren't getting in. So the committee thought that our RPI wasn't good enough and thought, you know, our strength of schedule and who we beat wasn't good enough. And, you know, we tell the guys every year, without an AQ, the committee is such a subjective thing. You really don't want to leave it up to a bunch of people, you know, who are going to, you know, make a judgment based upon numbers and, you know, what they see fit. So, but you listen, at the end of the day, it's in the past and you move forward.
Currently the Blue Devils in 2023, 10-1 record, ranked number one in the country. How would you best characterize this season so far for the Blue Devils?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You know, it's been, you know, from August on, you know, and you look back, you know, a season doesn't really begin at the first game. The season begins, you know, when guys first started getting back to campus in August. You know, like a lot of our teams, kids are incredibly compliant. They work really hard. We spent a little more time this year with an emphasis on fundamentals all the way up until the last possible day of the fall semester. And we made a little more emphasis on culture in the fall, only because in the spring, it's so busy, you know, classwork, you know, practice, you know, 6 days a week, you know, you're engaged, you're involved. It's almost harder to develop your chemistry and your culture, you know, in season. So we tried to do a little bit more in the fall this year than we have in the past.
When you do more things in the fall, what does that entail? What does that look like?
You know, just kind of more team events, more team building, more challenging guys, holding them accountable, to each other, really forcing young men now, and probably, you know, you could say young women too, at this age of really kind of dropping the phones, spending time together, looking each other in the eye, having uncomfortable conversations, and kind of teaching them how to, you know, really how to talk to one another and how to listen, you know, which is a skill that, you know, we all took for granted growing up. But as we all kind of understand, it's becoming a more difficult skill to, you know, to become excellent at. So, you know, those are the types of things that we spent time with, you know, and again, obviously X's and O's and in the weight room and, you know, everything else. But spent a lot of time on just accountability, responsibility. And again, you know, listen, who knows what that means in terms of this team, but that's what we did.
Coach, coming off a big win over the former number one ranked team, Virginia, and you're well known for putting things in perspective. But one thing I would love to get your perspective on is the stunning stat that Duke has beaten Virginia 22 times out of the last 24 times in the regular season. Can you reflect a little bit on that game this past week and that overall statistic that just jumps off the page to you?
Yeah, you know, I really can't explain that, but I will say that, you know, every year you play Virginia, even when I was at Hofstra, you know, you look at their talent and it scares the crud out of you. And so, you know, you prepare all week saying, hey, fellas, here's the deal. If you do this, or if you play like this, or if you continue to practice like this, they're going to put 30 on you in the first half. You know, and I think, you know, the Virginia week always gets guys' attention. I mean, they're just so highly skilled. They have a great tradition, you know, whether it was Coach Starzia, you know, or Coach Adams. When I first started at you know, at Hofstra, Coach Adams, Coach Starzia, you know, now Coach Tiffany, great coaching staff, unbelievable tradition. Best man at my wedding, in our wedding, I won't say my wedding, our wedding, played at the University of Virginia, you know, was an All-American and was on the first, you know, world team, Rich Warner. So, you know, it's a game that you know, everybody gets, you got to be so hyper-focused, because you just know that if not, you know, they're going to send you home. You know, they'll embarrass you.
Dan mentioned perspective, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know you over the years, and you've got some great stories, but you're the head coach at a school and a lacrosse program that is typically top three, if not number one, for young men playing lacrosse, a wish list of a place to go to. But you always have a great perspective on, hey, it doesn't always work out and life takes you in different paths. I was just wondering if you could maybe hit on that a little bit, your philosophy. And I know from your own personal experience, life experiences, you've experienced disappointment that you thought at that moment, this is my dream situation, this is my dream job, and it doesn't work out, but you're still in a pretty darn good place.
Yeah, you know, I tell two stories that I do fall back on from time to time. When I was a junior in high school, or so, you know, maybe even younger, I wanted to go to Notre Dame. You know, I wanted to be the quarterback at Notre Dame, right? And the head coach at the high school went to Notre Dame, you know? And so I thought, well, maybe, you know. So my senior year, I started as a quarterback as a junior and started as a senior. Then I got that letter from Notre Dame saying, thanks, but no thanks. You know, very nice letter. Okay, let's go. You know, we got to make a turn. I didn't have any Rudy in me, you know, to say, well, I'm going to prove them wrong and just show up. You know, and I ended up, at Rutgers, and, you know, the rest is history. You know, the other story I tell, and for the real lacrosse fans out there, Alan Lowe was my coach. He played at the University of Maryland. I was from Hempstead High School on Long Island. And he was my coach for JV basketball, JV lacrosse, 2 years of varsity lacrosse, and he was the offensive coach in football for 2 years. So I had Alan for, you know, something like 5 or 6 seasons during my high school time. He got me an interview at Manhasset High School, ninth earth science job, ninth grade science. It would have been the ninth grade football coach and like the JV lacrosse coach. And I didn't get the job. And I was, you know, newly married, and I was devastated. And I tell people all the time, if I had gotten that job, I wouldn't be talking to you this morning, that's for sure. You know, and so, the things that we think are the end of the world sometimes just open up a whole new path for us.
Well, we're talking about big picture things. Legendary coach Bill Tierney said he's going to step away from the sideline after this season. And you've known him a long time, coached against him a lot. When you think back on Coach Tierney's legacy, what are some of the things that will stand out to you?
You know, I had to do a video, or I was asked to do a video for University of Denver. I guess they're going to present maybe last home game or at some point. And it made me think back to, I was sitting in the stands at Hofstra University watching Billy coach Levittown Memorial High School in a high school playoff game. You know, then I'm sitting in the stands a few years later watching him coach at Johns Hopkins, you know, being an assistant coach, playing in the national championship. And then I'm sitting in the stands again watching him, you know, coach, you know, Princeton, you know, to several national championships. And I'm sitting in the stands one time at Hofstra where he makes the change at goalie at halftime, you know, and puts his son in. And, you know, and I've just got to watch him over the years. But more than all those big games and you know, big wins and, you know, the spotlight, he really cares about the game, you know, and that's a hard thing to do, because our jobs are tough enough. You know, our jobs, you know, you have a family, you know, he's got 4 children, you know, a wife. You can certainly say, hey, listen, that's enough, you know, but he cares so deeply about the sport, about the future, you know, coach the world team. I watched him practice with the world team the 1 year when Coach Cottle and Coach Seaman were on his staff. And you know, we're going to miss him for that, you know, for his resonance, you know, in terms of forcing guys to think about their roles, forcing people to think about the good of the sport, you know, and the future of the sport.
you hit on the world team, coach, and that responsibility falls to you as the head man for this coming summer's world championships to be held in San Diego. What has that experience taught you, and how has it helped you maybe be a better coach in your role as Duke?
You know, we took a lot of things that we do here, you know, and tried to say, you know, I think when I was at Hofstra, I would say to myself, you know, to the things that we do here, you know, would they work at a place like Duke? You know, because I had this vision of, you know, or this misconception of what the kids at Duke were like. And I think it was the same thing, you know, going into the USA. I found that the guys want to be coached. They want feedback. You know, they want some structure. You know, we always say that discipline and structure give you freedom, right? You know, another kind of term we use is, you know, we'll teach you the black and white, but you play in the gray. You know, all those spontaneous decisions that you make. And that's the fun of the game. You know, it's a player's game still. You know, it's not a coach's game. This is not football where, you know, we're going to have a lot of say come game day. And so, you know, the USA experience, the guys care really deeply about the experience. You know, they and winning trumps everything. You know, that last group of guys that we had were so incredibly unselfish, so incredibly driven team. They were so team oriented. It was scary. And at the end of the day, we needed all of that to win by a goal, you know, with 1 second to go. Now, with all that being said, if you lose, you know, with 1 second to go, then you're questioning everything. You know, then you're overanalyzing and you're like, ah, you know, all that stuff is BS. And, you know, but for now, I'll stay with the fact that the guys care deeply. They're open to these new experiences that we were trying to help them with, and winning trumped all.
You talk about how hard it is to win games at the Division I level, and you just hit on it. You know, the separation of era, that game could have gone either way, the World Championships a few years ago, but it went your way. I wonder if you could just, you know, touch on just, you know, the difference between winning and losing and what that can do to a coach's psyche and player psyche.
You know, one of the things that I do pretty often, I'll ask the players and I'll say, hey, did you guys look at the scores yesterday? And, you know, some guys will, some guys won't, you know, and I'll say, look at the number of one goal games every week. And it doesn't matter what conference, what level. I mean, you could pick Division II, III, high school, you know, but the number of one goal games is astonishing week to week. And I say to them, you know, at the end, the winning goal in overtime is dramatic, you know, extreme. A save is dramatic, but it's all the plays over the course of those 60 minutes that determine the outcome of the game. You know, if you get, sometimes you got to get lucky at the end. The ball bounces your way or you get a call, but it's the ability to play consistently. And I've always believed, and you know, again, we're a product of our environment, and I've always believed, and Coach Jack Cayley is another Hall of Fame coach who I had the privilege to play under in high school. He was relentless with us when I was in high school about fundamentals. I mean, our guys will still catch the ball and turn to the outside, because if we turned to the inside, coach put us on the end line and we would run the team. You know, he did some things that probably couldn't do today to young men, but, you know, we gladly stepped in line because we believed in him and we loved them. And so, and as we got older, we recognized his ability to instill discipline in us and instill the fundamentals of the game in us allowed us to be successful.
Dan just shuddered a little bit when you said you probably couldn't do that these days growing up the mean streets of Tower Hill, Delaware, and the scars that he carries. The 2023 Blue Devils, obviously 10-1, ranked number one in the country. Who have been your leaders this year?
You know, this is an interesting question, because I think leadership is a very difficult thing nowadays. And I think, you know, I think whoever you speak to, whatever coach, they would say it's, you know, it's hit or miss in some years. And I think this particular year, we are incredibly fortunate with some really great leadership. And again, you know, Wilson Stevenson, you know, Wilson's story is, you know, it's obviously been out there. You know, when he speaks, it's really easy for guys to listen. You know, he's a fifth year senior. You know, he's getting a master's in financial technology. You know, he's a terrific student. And, you know, when he has something to say, guys listen. Kenny Brower, you know, has had some success now at the international level. He's had success with us. You know, he's one of our captains, and he owns it, you know, each day. And but I think some of the and those guys are a little bit more outspoken. And there are two of our captains with Dyson Williams and with Tyler Carpenter. But we have some unspoken leadership from Andrew McAdory, who's a sophomore, and Brendan O'Neill, you know, that they play with great humility. You know, they're coachable and they're very unselfish offensively. And, you know, when your best players are unselfish, when your best players, you know, play with that kind of humility, you know, Brendan is not interested in NIL or podcasts or post-game interviews. You know, he's just uncomfortable. He just wants to play. And Andrew, as a sophomore, is playing a new position. And it's, you know, it's a transition going from midfield to attack. But he plays so hard all the time that gets contagious. And so there's this kind of, you know, behind the scenes kind of leadership that I think gets contagious. And there's this overt, you know, more traditional, I'm going to get in your grill, you know, if I don't think you're doing what you need to do, and or if the team is not doing what they should be doing. So we have a really kind of neat combination of both right now.
Coach, this Saturday you'll face a very good Notre Dame team in South Bend. What's been your impression of the Irish that you've seen on film, and what does Duke need to do to get a win on Saturday?
Well, we're just going to try to keep it close because they are phenomenal, right? Great energy at the faceoff X, you know, with Lynch. You know, the Kavanaughs play with so much fire, you know, fire. You know, I'd love to coach those guys, right? You know, they lead the team in, you know, points and ground balls and penalties. And, you know, I mean, they're phenomenal to watch, right? And goalie, you know, again, international level, you know, big, strong, has had a lot of success. Defensively, their scheme, you know, we got, you know, a couple of transfers and, you know, who have fit into their system. But Kevin does such a great job with those guys. Defensively, the system is almost, you know, it's greater than the sum is greater than the parts. And so as a unit, they are dynamite. You know, they held the team this year to 3 goals in Division I. That's like, you know, they're scoring, you know, they can score from all sorts of different angles. They've got a midfielder, you know, big left-hander that can, you know, he's got the heater. And so, you know, they're dynamite team.
Well, it should be an awesome game. Switching gears a little bit. One of the fun aspects of working in a college athletics department is building relationships with other coaches, student athletes from other teams. What's one team in particular at Duke you love to go and watch play?
Women's soccer. Not even close. Robbie Church and I go out to breakfast every Tuesday. You know, we just chop it up and talk about stuff. His son actually is an assistant coach at Florida Atlantic basketball. So he was at the Final Four. He said the other day that he sat in the 5th row, you know, for the Final Four. And he said it was incredible, you know, just to watch the athletes that were getting up and down. But, you know, Robbie is, and Carla Overbeck, you know, is a former captain of the U.S. women's national team, you know, that won in the Rose Bowl. And she is leadership personified. Love her. And, you know, that they have a great staff and they play like, you know, they play like they're coached, you know, by somebody who really cares. And, you know, they're always incredibly competitive.
Okay, thank you. Final question. We always talk about food on here, so I'm going to ask you, if someone's coming into Durham, what restaurant or restaurants do you recommend they go to?
Right now, the top of my list is a Southern Thing on Main Street.
Okay.
It's been there a couple times in the last month, and I have not been disappointed yet.
Thank you so much. Coach, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck to you and the Blue Devils this week and throughout the rest of the 2023 season. Thank you.
Well, hey, guys, thanks, man. It was a pleasure. I don't get to do this often, so I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Man, that was fun talking to him.
Coach Donowski is always fun to talk to. One of the stories, and I have a few from Coach Donowski over the years getting to know him, but this was back in 2011, NCAA quarterfinals in Foxborough. They're playing Notre Dame. I'm the sideline reporter for those two games. That was when Maryland had beaten Syracuse in the first game to go to – that was John Tillman's first year to go to the championship weekend. And then Duke played Notre Dame. And I had Coach Donowski at halftime coming back, you know, to start the second half. And our timing got messed up. So I had Coach Donowski thinking I was going to have him in like 20 seconds. And then my producer said, sorry, Dix, you know, we messed up with a, you know, something happened with a break or whatever. It's going to be about 3 minutes. So I said to Coach Donowski, I go, hey, I'm really sorry. It's going to be about 3 minutes, you know. And Dino looked at me, he goes, hey, all good. There's no place I'd rather be than right here, right now with you. And there was a Little Feat song playing over the PA. And he goes, great tune, by the way. Great tune. This is a guy in the quarterfinals. It was a tight game. They're playing Notre Dame. And he was as relaxed and cool as a cucumber. A lot of coaches would have told me where to stick my hat. And, you know, they weren't going to hang around. And Coach Donowski's just grooving, vibing, hanging out. That's the kind of guy he is. Kind of coach he is.
Well, let's talk about this game a little bit. Blue Devils are now 10-1 on the season, undefeated in ACC. And Notre Dame is right there. Many people think that they're Final Four contenders, and this should be a whale of a game.
It really will be. You know, on television, at Arlotta, I expect it to look gorgeous. It's going to be a great environment. You know, Notre Dame, again, a couple weeks ago, I'm like, this team is reminding me more and more of 06 Virginia. And you know, they get smacked by the Cavaliers. Controversy last weekend in the Dome, I guess a critical moment of the game, Liam Entman makes a save and his stick is outside of the goal. And then the momentum of the shot. So he makes the save outside of, you know, in front of the goal line. Then the momentum of the shot carries him in, you know, beyond the goal line. And the ball is in his stick, and the Syracuse faithful are screaming bloody murder. The rule actually is, and it's not something that you have, you know, you really talk about a lot because it's such a unique play. But if the goalie makes a save with the ball outside of the goal, which is the entire ball crossing the goal line, and then the momentum of the shot carries that stick with the ball and his stick past the goal line, that is not a goal. The ball has to become loose behind the goal line for it to be a goal. So in other words, if he makes a save and let's say for whatever reason, it hiccups in his stick and the ball comes out of his stick when the ball is behind the goal line, that's a good goal, let alone if it hits the ground. But if a goalie makes the save and the stick is in the goal and then he catches the ball when it's beyond the goal line, that is a good goal. So a lot of education this week on that call. And then from there, Notre Dame, you know, put their foot on the gas and just created distance, and Syracuse, and they were able to recover from that. But, you know, facing a Duke team that Coach Donowski talked about, I think I said it in recent weeks, I think McAdory moving to attack just makes that team so different, such an important move. Doesn't allow defenses to really focus as much on Brennan O'Neill because McAdory is so explosive from the right-hand side. And, oh, by the way, if you pay too much attention to the wings, you got Dyson Williams on the inside who can kill you. So I think midfield play will be really, really big in this one. and we'll see who comes out on top.
Naso's been great at the faceoff X. I think he's at like 62% on the season.
That's
I
crazy.
The faceoff battle great. Will be.
Yeah. Goaltending will be huge too. Obviously, Entman, arguably the best goaltender. Well, probably the best goaltender in Division One right now, with the injury to Logan McNaney. Will Mark from Syracuse is having a sensational year, but goaltending will be big in this one too.
Okay, and our final game of the weekend. You'll be on the call with this one again. Number 6 Johns Hopkins travels to Panzer Stadium to take on number 8 Penn State at 7 o'clock Saturday night on BTN.
The Big Ten is wide open. And I would not be surprised if Penn State at the end of this thing is holding the gold. Jack Posey, very, very good defensively. Jack Frassian has provided some stability in the goal. They're facing off much better this year. They have two guys in Mullins and Bond that can get the job done. And then offensively, they're just really dynamic and really athletic with the Trainer brothers and TJ Malone and Kevin Winkoff, the transfer, has been great for Penn State. And they're playing a Johns Hopkins team. I mean, honestly, you got to look at maybe Peter Milliman as potentially coach of the year if the Blue Jays can keep up this success. I mean, let's be honest. I'm 51 years old. In my lifetime, probably the most embarrassing, not probably, it was the most embarrassing season of Johns Hopkins across 2022. And I can't say in program history because I haven't been around for 100 plus years. But for Hopkins to be 9-3 after that disastrous season a year ago, and when you looked at their schedule for 2023, you're like, that's a loss, that's a loss, that's a loss. They're the win, that's a loss. No one expect. I mean, if they were 3-9 at this point, people would be like, yeah, that's what we expected from Hopkins. But they got so many weapons offensively, very, very balanced. And I think their defense makes them different this year. Mazzone makes them different. Smith is having an All-American caliber season. Marcio back in the goal after being pulled against Michigan. This one, baby, Saturday night, prime time. Can't wait to call this game. I'll be with Jason Ross Jr. Everybody calls him Baby Gus because he has a Gus Johnson-like voice.
Well, I can't wait for it. And I'll certainly be tuning in to watch my beloved Jays and you on the call on Saturday night. All right, Dix, let's move on to this week's give and go. All right, it's Easter. It's Easter season. We're going to talk about Easter traditions. You can give me underrated, overrated, or just, you know, high quality, cool kind of thing. All right, let's start with Easter decorations. Put around the house. The bunny, the eggs. I had to go to the dentist this week, and they had a tree. A metal, what? They had like a metal tree where they had taped eggs to sticks and then taped the sticks to it to make it look like an egg tree. And they had this all over. They had like two or three of them. How do you feel about the Easter decorations?
I love the colors of Easter because when the weather gets nice, like it has been this week in the Baltimore area, and you have Easter and you have the yellows and the light blues.
Pastels.
Pastels. I dig that. I can't really dig an Easter tree. And the Easter bunny might be the creepiest, you know, symbol of a holiday that's out there. I mean, I'll be like, I don't know, overrated maybe slightly.
Yeah, I don't think the Flynns have any decorations for this particular holiday that we put out. And
we don't either.
We're decorations kind of people, like something on the front door, like for St. Patrick's Day in the month of March, I hang some kind of thing on my door, like St. Patrick's Day, obviously.
A shillelagh?
Christmas is, you know, try to be like Clark Griswold at Christmas time, but we don't have any decorations for it. Okay, next thing, Easter egg hunts, neighborhood Easter egg hunt.
We never did a neighborhood. Did we do a neighborhood? We may have when the kids were younger. I miss Easter eggs. I miss my kids being young for Easter. Used to have a good time dyeing eggs with them. And then we used to, I mean, the Easter egg hunts were epic. I mean, they were great. When you have two boys that are competitive and, you know, aggressive, the Easter egg hunt would be very interesting. So I love good Easter egg hunt, high quality.
Yeah, same here. We have a family, John and Julia Zick live up the street from us, and that's their thing. every year. They have an incredible Easter egg hunt. All the families come over. There's a lot of kids there. She hides about 1,000 eggs in there.
What?
And then she has like time things. So the littlest kids go, and then, you know, the older, and then the, like the older kids go. And then the adults, we basically have a barbecue, or, you know, there's adult beverages that could get consumed.
Very cool.
And at some point he sneaks off, John sneaks off and puts on his Easter bunny costume.
Oh boy.
Comes back out to scare the little kids.
Yeah.
There are certain kids who love the Easter bunny mascot suit. The grownups love it at that point. And then 1 year, this was amazing. One of the dads in the neighborhood went and bought like 6 cases of craft beer, like really good stuff. And then after the kids went, he hid it around the yard secretly. And then he comes back and hands us all a cardboard, like 6-pack holder. And he says, it's time for the adult Easter egg hunt. And we just would walk around and we could just pick the beers that we wanted from there. And they were all cold, sat there. Oh, that was a good Saturday. That was a good Saturday morning in the Dickinson neighborhood.
That's great.
Yeah. So that was, he was a dad of the year for that. Let's get to the main course here. The Easter basket, Easter candy. Where do you stand on Peeps?
Horrible.
Most overrated food item, I think, that there is out there. Agree. All right. How about a white chocolate versus dark chocolate versus milk chocolate?
Milk chocolate all day, dark chocolate second, white chocolate is a distant third.
Ooh, I think that's
distant
the way
third.
That's the way I would go. But when I was a kid, white chocolate was number one.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that
why.
Because they called you white chocolate because
they
of
did.
your moves on the dance floor?
Yeah, definitely. Now, how do you feel about the hollow chocolate Easter bunny versus the solid chocolate Easter bunny?
Got to go solid on that one. Got to go solid.
The hollow is so disappointing. It is exactly that. It is hollow. And it's like having the person who gives it to you, it's like their soul is also hollow.
Yeah. Soul is also, that's tough. That's tough.
About a Reese's peanut butter eggs?
Best Easter candy, hands down. I will fight you on that if you say there's anything better than the peanut butter chocolate egg. They kick Cadbury's butt. Cadbury's are actually pretty gross when you think about it. But the caramel ones are okay. But yeah, the peanut butter eggs by Reese's, top notch.
I think Cadbury eggs, I agree with you. The cream eggs are, that they were a novelty because there wasn't candy like that. And then they just made them better. And the original ones just are kind of gross.
Yeah.
All right. Jelly beans.
I like Starburst jelly beans. Those are really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think Jolly Rancher made one too, but I know my boy, we used to get the boys Starburst jelly beans every year.
With the array of candy that's available, I would say jelly beans are actually underrated at this point. Because
I would give it underrated as well.
Because they make them a lot better. Like you with really flavors, and they're better at making jelly beans, yet it's been downplayed by our society.
And the jelly beans are smaller, which I think makes them better. Like they're not those big kind of gross sugar bombs. That used to be out there.
I'm on Team Jelly Bean. I think that's okay. All right. Last question. Is it okay to put regular candy in the Easter basket, or is that off the table? So, for instance, can you put a Hershey bar in there?
Nah, go regular. Go. No, don't go regular candy. Go Easter candy. And that's the other thing, too. Like, I guess a lot of people feel like Easter is kind of Christmas light, like you need a gift or something, like a toy I guess we used to do that with the kids too, but you always kind of felt like, it's a little anticlimactic, you know, should just be the candy, you know, chocolate bunny kind of thing. But yeah, no, you got to go with Easter candy for an Easter basket.
Totally agree.
No doubt.
Special occasion. They have great Easter specific candies, and that is the only way to go. You cannot put a Twix bar, a Reese's peanut butter cup, anything like that, Snickers bar in there, unless it's shaped like an egg or a bunny. Okay, that sounds like a good place to stop. I would like to thank our guest this week, Duke head coach John Donowski. Thanks for your time, coach, and best of luck to the Blue Devils moving forward this season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review, tell a friend, and share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse. I'm simply at D_FLY. If you want to give me, send an email to me, I'm at dbflynn@gmail.com. And as always, happy Easter, happy Passover, and enjoy the games.
This is Bennett Flynn, and you're listening to my dad and Dixie on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Let's get it.